This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Chicago, the grudge matches on the gridirons might be gone, but get ready to hit the ball and touch them all at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the real MVPs of SUVs. If you're thinking about rounding third and heading for home in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step and banner up. Need the power and durability of a Silverado? The all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer? The spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban? Or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to win the game like a pro. So don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate the nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy. Together, let's drive.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Tuesday, coming to you live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and joined by Bills General Manager Brandon Bean. And we want to remind you, Ticketmaster is the title sponsor of this year's NFL Scouting Combine coverage. Ticketmaster is the official ticketing partner of the NFL and the Buffalo Bills. Brandon, thanks for making some time, as always. We appreciate the annual visit we get here with you in Indy. And you got some good news to share with everybody. Khalil Shakir is under contract through 2029. How quick did that come together?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're thrilled to, you know, it's not pen to paper yet, but we're thrilled to come to an agreement here just, you know, a couple hours ago, and I know that that news just broke. But, yeah, Khalil, as you guys know, is just what a pro, done everything exactly the right way, and he's one of those guys, he doesn't say much, he just lets his play speak for itself, and a highly respected guy in our locker room, and that's what you want to do. You want to reward the guys that are like, you know, Khalil. That right. You know, I think you'd have a hard time finding someone to say a bad word about Khalil Shakir and what he's brought to our team the last 3 years, and what we'll count on him to bring, you know, for years to come.
Yeah, and it is always a deal when you sign a player. It's a big moment for them, big moment for the franchise. It's in it, but you got to do that like 50 more times this offseason. and there's a list of guys that you know, that are strong considerations. And how many guys have you called? I mean, obviously, James Cook has been a topic of discussion because he's eligible now. You got a guy like Christian Benford, who has far outperformed his draft status.
Terrell Bernard
has become almost indispensable. So you got some other guys that are eligible, deserving, guys you just plain love. You know, so how do you approach that priority-wise?
Yeah, and all the guys you mentioned there fit our philosophy of draft, develop, and extend, you know, resign, however you want to do it. So there is a cap, and so you're always worrying about that. And we have lost guys that we would have loved to extend, you know, in the past, because you still have to fit it in. And sometimes we do go out there and say, man, there is a position that we don't have on here that we need to improve, that we will do it by a free agency or trade or whatever that may be. So we still have to consider all those moves. But, yes, we've had discussions with guys. Some we'll have here with their representatives. Some, even if we haven't, you know, maybe we will in a week or two. It's a giant puzzle. And as you see one deal take shape, that can kind of point, okay, we have this, now we can do this. And you know, we have a couple of weeks that we have to get into cap compliant. And some deals you do can help you with the cap.
Yeah.
You can actually move some things down. Some will hurt you on the cap. So we're balancing all that. And just because we don't sign a guy today, next week, doesn't mean we wouldn't, you know, later in the spring or summer be able to get that done.
It always seems like there's a little bit of a season right before training camp, or
yep,
right at training
yeah
camp.
Extension
gives you
season.
Some,
yeah.
Did Spencer last year that way.
Right.
As we know, James Cook did a little posturing on social media, then pulled it back. It seems like his intentions, though, for all intents and purposes, are pure. He just wants to get fair market value in his estimation, and Coach addressed it to some extent yesterday. Where do we feel he falls in that line of consideration that you were just discussing?
Yeah, love James. I mean, you're never going to get me to say a bad word. I mean, what he's done and the improvement and the maturity and all the things that he's brought, and, you know, had some explosive plays for us this year, some tough runs too, not just the explosive ones. So we want James here. You know, we've, you know, as he alluded to, we've had conversations. You know, I'd prefer those all be kept in-house.
Right.
You know, we've generally had more success that way. But I love James, and I love who he is. He is pure as anyone. And so I understand, and like anything, everyone wants what they believe is their fair value. Sometimes you don't always see eye to eye. And, again, we don't talk about negotiations publicly, but I love James Cook. And, you know, hopefully we can keep him in Buffalo, you know, for the foreseeable future. But, again, it, you know, when you work on deals, whether it's his or someone else, like Khalil's, you have to come to a consensus that we all think this is a fair value to get the deal. And there's been plenty of guys here we've been able to do that with. And then there's been some guys that by the time their contract expired, we hadn't. And, you know, they go test the water.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the salary cap, when might you find out what it's actually going to be?
You have an idea now, but
we at least got an idea. We, you know, we got the range, which was nice. You know, hopefully here very soon. I know they're in the final negotiations with the PA and the NFL Management Council on how things are allotted. But we at least kind of know where it's, you know, we've got it down to 277 to roughly 281. So, you know, a solid increase again this year, maybe not as much as last year, but still, you know, solid.
It's a lot of money, but it's still only about 3% off, or 2.5% that you don't know. You're
yeah,
fine point.
You're still, and those are players, so
yeah,
it does matter, and it could matter. Hey, you know what? Maybe it's one less player you have to release or move on from,
right,
or maybe you can structure a deal a little bit differently because, you know, it's $3 million difference. So
yeah,
it does matter, and hopefully we'll get that real soon. But we were glad to get that information last week to at least give us that the floor at
yes,
a minimum.
There you go, yeah.
And when we get the floor, that's what we operate. So today we're operating off of
277.5,
and if we get a bump, we get a bump.
And speaking of that, you've got a player in Von Miller who had a really nice pressure rate there at the end of the season for you. You know, hurrying throws, ill-advised throws from your opponents because of him. He was a guy that worked with you last year to adjust his contract to help you guys out. How do you approach that and navigate that, though, as a GM when you've gone to the well once already? And, I mean, look, I don't think I have to tell you or anybody else. He turns 36 next year, and maybe he's not your average 36-year-old. I think we would all agree on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard not to look at what the numbers say and say, oh, wow, he would be a pretty big cap savings for this team. But they love Von. How do they work that?
Yeah. No, I mean, what? Let's just start with last year. What Von did for this team, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone or heard of someone take less than what they were guaranteed. And he did a very team-friendly, I know I was injured, I want to be here, I want to see this thing through. And, you know, big-time kudos for that. that is, you know, you're talking about a first ballot Hall of Famer that did that. There's a lot of guys that have a lot of pride in this league, rightfully so, for what they've done. And that just showed you how bad he wanted to make this work in Buffalo and help us chase the championship. As far as this year, we're working through everything. You know, we'll meet with his people. Vaughn and I have even, you know, texted or spoken after the season. So, again, we've got some time before we have to make, you know, some final rostering decisions. And as we said, every little thing matters with the cap or extensions, things like that. So I would say, you know, decisions like that are still fluid.
Yeah. I put Sean on the spot. I was going to ask him, when do you find out about the compensatory picks? Is there a date? I pointed to the website. They show you 10 picks. And you think you do, right?
Yeah. We should. We should. Did Sean give you a very good compensatory calculated formula answer?
Well, we'll find out.
No. And the slide rule and the abacus involved either.
Did he break down how it all works and everything?
Yeah.
The sliding scale.
Yeah, he let me in a little. He gave me a peek behind the curtain. It wasn't pretty.
You don't want to look behind that curtain again.
Something tells me he's not looking behind the same curtain you are.
Yeah, that's right. So,
yeah. The answer is, you know, I know last year we had the thing, we should have got the third. It was a rule deal. But we should have, you know, it's not confirmed until you get it. You don't know. But we believe by everything we've been told, including our contact with the league, that, you know, it'll be 2/5. And so hopefully that'll be confirmed, I would say, next week to 10 days maybe.
Okay. Looking at the defensive class in this draft class, we saw Kansas City in the 22 draft pretty much refortify their defensive roster in almost one draft class, that Trent McDuffie class. Mm-hmm. Are you encouraged by the depth of defensive talent in this year's class to think that perhaps you could refortify your defense in a similar way?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're definitely working through that. Last night was night one of interviewing some of these young men, so I love that part of it. You know, we've seen the guys with their helmets on, watching them compete, maybe even prior to this year, you know, as they've come up. So last night we got 11 or 12 guys in front of us. We've got a full slate again tonight and tomorrow. So, you know, and the defense is here first. So it was all defense last night. Yes, I mean, like, you're always looking. Our goal is, whether it's offense, defense, whatever, we want early key contributors. Some guys mature. Some things work out faster. It's always, what school did they come from? What, you know, did they have this much volume of defense at school X and now it's going to here? Or were they playing in a more of a system that's got pro coaches that have, a higher volume? So that's part of what we're finding out between now and the draft. What is their football foundation? Just because they know this this small amount doesn't mean they're not smart and they can't learn. It could be that coach just wants to keep it simple. I'm not worried about how smart these guys are. I'm going to let them play fast. Well, the volume that we use in the pros and every team is going to be heavier. So sometimes that takes, whereas year one, they don't always translate as fast. You would love for them all to, and we will work, you know, for whatever guys we draft, whether it's, you know, more defense than offense, whatever it is, you know, it's our job to get them lined up, take the best players that fit us both on the field and off the field.
Okay, last one. So I remember we've seen the footage of you in drafts past up in the suite watching guys run the 40, right? Mm-hmm. Who are you going to be cheering for to run slow this year?
I've got some names listed.
Yeah, all right. Okay, all right. That's good.
I've got some names listed.
Sometimes you get sold on a guy. You don't need to see him test, right?
Yeah. No, you love it. And we talk about that. We actually do some pretty good bantering in our draft room. You know, we meet for 2 weeks with the college scouts right before we come here, and we put some laughable, you know, wagers on the board at each other. Just
that's right.
And you know, at the end of the draft after April, we go back through and we torture each other. And you got to do the walk of shame when you lose.
Take his name off the board.
Exactly. So there's definitely a good amount of bantering that's already started.
The best.
And so we'll see though. There are definitely some guys that we know, or we say, I don't know how well he's going to test, but the guy's a damn good football player.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brandon, thanks for the time.
Thanks,
as always,
man.
Good luck.
Enjoy the weekend. Good luck getting
your work done this week.
Appreciate you guys.
And we'll see you down the line here in the offseason. That's Bills GM Brandon Bean joining us here on One Bills Live.
On Shakir, So I think there's plenty to say about it. I have a very controversial take. I don't think it's a steal. I think it's a fine contract. I don't think it's a steal. I think if you think he was going to command 20, you might overestimate that the Bills would have walked away from that. Mm-hmm. 15 is an average for Shakir is fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. How good is he? Is he the 23rd best receiver in football? Probably not. I don't really care. It's the passage of time.
He was the 21st graded PFF receiver last year.
Very good. That's great. Good for him. Do teams worry about him? Game plan for him? Does he alter the way teams play? Maybe a little bit. Maybe sometimes. You know, that was the fourth down play in Kansas City called for Shakir, but the blitz blew it up, so Allen had to make a Herculean effort to get it to Kincaid. That's that orbit motion play that they've run on fourth downs before. Is Shakir their go-to guy on fourth and five in the AFC Championship game? He might be. I've got really not much bad to say about Shakir at all. But I don't think it's a steal. I think it's, when he's on a rookie contract, that's a steal. And now he's paid like a receiver that's expected to produce, but not that much. $15 million, if you put up 1,100 yards, we're going to say great season from you. What did he put up this year? 900?
821,
and
I think.
Four touchdowns?
Yep.
Okay.
On 100 targets.
100 targets. Like 100 targets is not a lot. There's a point to be made here about James Cook. He's not on the field that much. So should I pay him like Saquon Barkley if he's not going to be on the field as often as these guys? All the running backs and their snap counts, Cook is not near the top. So do I get a discount because he doesn't play as much? He might not think so. And Shakir, 100 targets, that's not a lot. That's not a lot at all. That's what Xavier Worthy got as a rookie that people describe as a gadget player. Got 99 targets, or I think maybe 98. So I think they got Shakir for a solid number, and you want to adjust it down a little bit for inflation. The cap goes up about $50 million every year. It's just the kind of contract that I'm not going to worry about. He's probably a better $15 million than Dawson Knox is.
Oh, my gosh.
He's
100%.
He's a much bigger part of the offense than Dawson Knox.
He's a more dangerous player. He's a more effective player. He's a more regular part of the passing game, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. You really put him in line because of the cap going up. You put him in line with the free agent class from the last two years, where who are the veteran receivers on their second contract immediately below Khalil Shakir per year? Mm-hmm. He's going per year. It's throw Tyler Lockett out for a moment because I think he's going to get cut. Right? Maybe that's part of this anyway. Right below that. Gabe Davis, Darnell Mooney, Allen Lazard, Jacoby Myers. Those four guys were all changed your team, right? Free agent contract. And when they signed, it was, nice deal. Mooney got $13 million per year. Jacoby Myers, $11 million per year. Like, those seemed like pretty good size free agent contracts at the time. And if you, again, for inflation for the cap, you kind of move Shakir down to like percentage of cap that he just signed for versus those guys for when they signed, then I think that puts him right in the right tier, doesn't it? Like, he's in that Darnell Mooney, Jacoby Myers tier of, we're hoping to get a good number two. We're hoping to get a good number two. Right now is the Bills' number one, but I don't think even they would kid themselves to think he's as good as the number one guys that are on this list. He's as good as the free agent number two receivers of the past couple of years.
Yeah, he represents the caliber of receiver they probably should have been adding in free agency a bunch. Maybe the caliber they tried, maybe a little lower. I mean, Curtis Samuel's not that. But Mooney is a great example. Like, Darnell Mooney's a good player.
He's a very good player.
He's a very good player that at $13 million is a good price.
And he does kind of play
outside.
Right? It's tough to almost compare because he kind of plays a different position.
Yeah.
He runs different routes.
Yep.
He's running at different levels of the field. And he's very good. I mean, he's had a great year in Atlanta. But maybe Myers is a closer comp to Shakir.
Jacoby,
like, would you
Myers.
Say he's about as good as Jacoby Myers? In the same category?
Yeah.
Same tier? Like, so for me, yeah, fine. I think the thing that they would have spent more And you start now getting into, oh, all right, Mike Evans and T. Higgins on his deal and, you know, Calvin Ridley even. Like, again, there's just not many slot receivers that are above him. Who is it? Like, it's you're kind of CeeDee Lamb is that, because CeeDee Lamb plays a lot in the slot.
Yeah, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown, of course.
Yeah, but even he, I think he just had a year where he played like 65% on the outside.
Okay.
Like, primary slot guy, Cooper Kupp. It's kind of it. Like, there aren't many slot guys that are getting paid that's above him. Hitting Cooper Kupp and, like, Keenan Allen, and that's about it.
Right. Yeah, we're going off in the chat a little bit about this. Like, if you're comparing Shakir to Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, the Bills aren't stupid, and Shakir's not stupid. If Shakir thought he had the value of Amon-Ra St. Brown, an AAV of $30 million per year, he would not sign for 15.
Right.
It's very simple.
If he thought he had that in him, he wouldn't have signed this offseason.
No way.
He would have played next year. He would have tried to, you know, do more than what he just did. He wouldn't have done that. St. Brown played 577 snaps outside and 483 in the slot. You don't get that from Shakir.
He played where?
St. Brown played 577 on the outside and 483 in the slot.
Yeah, he's
so it's pretty close.
So he's a complete receiver.
He's just a complete receiver. And Shakir is not.
None of this is to say Shakir is bad or the deal's bad or anything. It's just, it's just, I think the deal is appropriate. I'm not running around screaming steal, it's going to be a bargain, because I think that can be a trap with a lot of contracts. Like, oh, wow, this is going to be a steal. No, I think it's just good. It's good. And you are, I think, unlikely to regret it. How's that? Unlikely to regret it.
Yeah, what would have to happen for them? I don't see the player taking a step back that would get you to regret it.
Yeah, he did not have a crazy, goofy year. He's good yards after the catch. He breaks tackles. He makes guys miss. He's very sure-handed. So I don't think you'll regret the deal at all. Who's next? My money's on Terrell.
Right,
money's on Terrell Bernard is next.
You thought Bernard was going to be first.
It's
a little interesting to me that he was first.
Shakir?
Not like stunning by any means.
The Cliff Notes, Shakir and Bernard were the two I thought would be the easiest, or at least highest priority for the Bills, and it kind of gets back to that conversation about the other receivers, because there's no world in which the Bills would have ever franchise tagged Khalil Shakir, and they would never franchise tag Terrell Bernard. So with that in mind, they probably have a good, you know, bee in their bonnet, if I could use that, I guess, to get this deal done this year. If you go to next year, those guys are going to the open market, and I can protect against that by signing them now. I would not use the franchise tag. You would use the franchise tag on Benford. You would use it on Rousseau, and you would even use it on Cook. None of those franchise tags are prohibitive. The one on Shakir would have been nuts. You never would have paid him, you know, $27 million for a year. You would have known you're losing, and your negotiating would be in real trouble. And same with Bernard. That's why I think Bernard could be next. And McDermott raved about Bernard at the Combine again.
Back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, pleased to be joined now by Bills head coach Sean McDermott, also a proud member of the NFL's competition committee. And we should tell you, Ticketmaster is the title sponsor of this year's NFL Scouting Combine coverage. Ticketmaster is the official ticketing partner of the NFL and the Buffalo Bills. Coach, you've been at work already a couple of days here. I mean, I know you got some media responsibilities here, but competition committee, you guys are the first ones here, I think.
Yeah, we're cracking here. Meetings half the day yesterday, started at 1 o'clock, got done around 5, and then today all day up until I'm visiting with you two friendly faces.
How many guys in the room for that? How many are there? Is there a set number of?
Just picture a ballroom, and it changes based on who's in, you know, what other subcommittees are being loaded in.
Yeah.
But picture a ballroom, and or at least a half a ballroom, and it's filled with committee members and subcommittee members.
There's a couple dozen guys. Yeah, at least. Yes.
At least.
Yeah.
So let's just, because we're hearing the reports coming out about some of the tweaking for the dynamic kickoff. How would you characterize the changes that are being considered? Would you characterize them as tweaks to what we saw last year? Would that be the best way to kind of describe potential changes that could come?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good way to describe it, because of, we feel overall that the result of the kickoff play, the new kickoff play, the dynamic kickoff, was it hit the mark in terms of the desired goals, right? In terms of, you know, getting the play back in the game,
injuries,
injury reduction, right. And so. But now it's tweaking it to your point, Chris, about how we can even enhance it even more.
Okay. And by enhancing, you mean making it like fewer touchbacks, a little few more returns? Or I mean, you don't want to go overboard and have 100% kickoff return rate, but nevertheless, you do want a more less than a throwaway down, right?
Right. And so there's a lot to talk about with the kickoff rule and how it affects the game, how it affects punts and whatnot. But really, it's how can we make it better? You know, the 35-yard line's been thrown out there in terms of the touchback.
Sure.
But even increasing the level of returns, right, as you said. So changing the game that way.
That would seem to do it. If you move the touchback out, if you kick it out of the end zone and they're going to get the ball at the 35, well, that's a little less incentive you have for not giving the guy a chance to return it and having maybe being forced to or incentivized having more faith in your coverage guys to tackle him short of the 35, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thought of it, right?
It is. That's the kind of the genesis of the idea. And, I got to be honest with you, when I first heard it, I was like, but listening a little bit more to some of the conversations that are going on in the room, it's something that we seriously need to think about.
What about the landing? I tell him Brownie a little.
Oh, he's got another idea
to expand the landing area.
He's got a few.
He wants
ideas.
To expand the landing zone. That's what he wants to.
I'm a free thinker.
To where, like,
I'm a free
East
thinker.
Aurora, which is where you live, to
halfway Park, to Orchard, just halfway to Orchard Park,
West
right? Then that way, yeah. And by expanding the landing area, that would open up a different type of kick, a line drive kick, get the ball on the ground, bouncing around, a little more chaotic.
Right.
And that's something, it's really hard to do now because the 20 as the landing area, you got to carry it a minute, and that's hard kick. It's harder to make that kick.
Yeah.
So there are all kinds, but like I said, there are all kinds of unintended consequences, but some if you tweak it a little bit and you open a little crack of a door, somebody could bust through that door and take advantage of the rule. But what about expanding the landing area and making the kick a little bit different type of kick?
Well, that's been talked about a little bit.
Right.
We visited on that. I think where we ended up this past season was a good spot to start from, and like I said before, it's covered most of the desired goals. So trying to keep some level of consistency, continuity,
yeah. I get that.
And just tweak here and there to enhance again the already desired result that we got this past season.
Speaking of special teams, you've got a new special teams coordinator in Chris Tabor. This is the first special teams coordinator you've had since 2018 with prior experience at the pro level. How high on your list of priorities and what you were looking for in a special teams coordinator was prior pro level experience in the role?
I would say very high, very high. And it is really hard, like it is in most positions or cases overall, to find what I would say are top shelf experienced guys.
Sure.
Because usually they're tied up somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, had a chance to, talk to Chris a little bit and then spend some more time with him. And he's been a guy I've been – he's been on my radar just, tracking his career. He's had a lot of success, been to a lot of different places. He's one of the, call it top tier, top shelf guys that are out there. And
a lot of top 10 finishes for him in a lot of those four major groups.
What were some of the issues that when you talked to him about what his philosophy was, about what he expected from you and what you were going to expect from him? I imagine some of it had to do with personnel that would be made available to him on the roster, decisions about who could play, who he could use, how much practice time. Some of this, is that kind of the conversation?
Well, it is. It's part of the interview process and just,
right.
Getting more and more familiar with what his philosophy is and what my philosophies are in terms of from a head coaching standpoint, how I see special teams, utilization of personnel, who's available, how many are available. So just really just kind of going back and forth of in that regard to, how does he see special teams overall and then within each phase. Chris is a little bit of a different situation whereby he was out last year out of the league.
Right.
And had a chance to sit back and watch watch the new kickoff take place and also study some things and study other coordinators and whatnot. So we had a great conversation. It happened fast from a standpoint of, you know, kind of, you know, a couple interviews and then we're able to make the decision there. But, you know, happy to add him, happy to have his family with us.
There is a new senior defensive assistant as well in Ryan Nielsen. His specialty, at least recently in his career, is he's been a big proponent of man coverage. I know that's something you guys turned to a little bit more last season from a defensive philosophy. Do you feel that he's going to be able to maybe enhance or increase the variance of what you guys traditionally have done defensively?
Yeah, I know that that's out there. Really kind of outside the box thought, I would say. Really, Coach Nielsen is his forte is defensive line play. So he's really being brought in to be, yes, senior defensive assistant. So macro level area, but also really hone in on the defensive line.
Okay.
That's really how he has come up through the league and had a lot of success. And so he's going to work together with Marcus and with Jason, reps there, and you know, again, spend most of his time with our defensive line.
Gotcha. Well, I got to ask you, too, one of the things that came out, and I want to go back to the competition committee for a minute, this replay review. They're going to expand or tweak what they can do and maybe expand a couple of plays where they weren't allowed to intervene before and now can. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, boy. You know,
it's a big can of worms to open, right?
It's going down that rabbit hole potentially, which I think it is important. I think we're at a good spot. And so expanding it, we need to be really smart on how far that goes and when that line in the sand has to be drawn again, because that needs to be a very clear line. So that's my opinion on it. And I feel like, you know, we'll get there. It just takes time, you know, in terms of having good conversations and, you know, sometimes hard conversations also.
Right. The outside observers, who, as we all know, have opinions, feel like if in refortifying your defense, speed is what you guys need. That just keeps coming up. We hear it from callers, not their opinions carry as much weight as others, but speed keeps getting brought up. What's your philosophy on maybe adding speed to a defensive unit in general?
Well, listen, here's the thing about speed. Everyone loves speed. Speed and small, you know, that's not how you want to have speed. You want to be speed and big and powerful, right? That's the right combination of speed. But yes, I do believe in speed. We do believe in speed. But speed with size and power and explosiveness, sign up for that.
Yeah, one of the benefits, we talk about it some too, one of the benefits of being big and speedy is durability and speedy,
yes,
because the lighter you are, and we've been, I mean, during the 17 years of the drought, we've seen where you've got two dozen guys on IR and they're all kind of light guys playing in the box and they just get beat up. But this is, we're here now and this is a draft that's supposedly deep in big dudes down inside. Those guys that are genetically different that you don't, you know, that
don't grow on trees.
That don't grow on trees.
Us three.
like the rest of us, like civilians. So, so, you know, when you come in and certainly, you don't have to tell us, you know, the entire strategy, but certainly you've got
a
plan.
You want me to say rounds 1 through 7?
That would be nice. That would be nice. I'd be shocked if you actually could. But this is a time where you got to evaluate. And the roster now is going to be different after free agency begins. Yeah. But you still don't know about free agency. What, you know, so how do you sort through what's probably going to be the draft looking after free agency and know your plan in free agency, and if you can carry out your plan in free agency, then what's the draft going to look like?
Right, and I think that's really where Brandon and his staff come in, because they've spent, you know, close to all year when we're playing and coaching, looking into the future of who's coming up in the free agent market, and then how that aids us in the draft, and then how we can offset the draft, you know, so on and so forth. But listen, at the end of the day, we have to be shopping for the best football players out there, right? And so if you say we have to find this position or we have to, you know, get this player, there's only a few players that you say that about, right? Other than that, it's best player for our football team, best player available, and that's where you make the right decisions more times than not.
Last one for you, because we know your time is short. Your D defensive coordinator, play caller, is the same guy year over year for the first time in 3 years. I know the scheme hasn't changed, but even you said last year, it's going to be different because there's a new person calling it. This is the first year in 3 years that's not happening. How does that best help or serve your defense with that continuity?
Well, there's been that continuity through the better part of 3 years, whether I was calling
right.
it Leslie or now Bobby. So I think the biggest thing now is Bobby coming back for year two in that same role, that same seat. And then again, my, you know, being close, you know, tied closely to Bobby and our being aligned philosophically on what we want to be, who we want to be. Defensively, and that listen, it's you have to continue to evolve every year. So, and studying the game, study where the game's going. I mean, you look at the Super Bowl. You look at all these different areas to improve as a coach to kind of again look into the future of where's the game going defensively. And usually, it's based on hey, what's out there and what the offenses are trying to do. And we just believe in. Hey, trying to be out in front of it by maybe 5+ years, trying to, but then people catch up. So you got to go another 5 years out again, and that's the work you got to put into it, and that's the visionary piece of it, I believe.
Last one for me. I see my computer here. See this? This is the projected 10 picks of the Bills.
Well, they're projecting anticipated.
How? When is this going to be? You know for sure going to be accurate. When do you guys find out when the compensatory picks come out? When is that happening? Because that's what it looks like now. You got 30, 56, 62, 108, 131, 171, 175, 179, 206, and 208. When is that going to be set in stone instead of on a computer screen?
What am I, the president of the United States right now? Or
you're
what?
Like, actually a little bit more important at this moment.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, you want me to also write in here who we're going to draft at all these positions?
No, you can tell me that later so I look smart.
And give you the
tell me that later in secret.
Well, we are looking, I mean, yeah. You know, we are anticipating, I should say, to get some compensatory picks.
When do you find that out? Do you know?
We'll see. You know, we'll see. I don't know exactly
the
day.
It's like the next week or so.
Yeah, it's coming up.
It's close.
It's got to come up.
Yeah, it's
coming up soon. So, I mean, that'll be something, again, that'll help us. And you lose some players that went on to play well at other spots, and we're happy for those guys. But also, you get those picks in return.
Right, yeah. So, all right. Well, good luck with it. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate
you
coming in, man. It's great to see you.
Thanks, as always, for
enjoy
your time,
the week,
Coach.
Coach.
We appreciate it. Good luck getting your work done this week. That's Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
I don't know. I've been in the Kincaid discourse again today.
There's a Kincaid discourse?
There's Bulldog on in the fantasy world. There is always a discussion happening about Dalton Kincaid. Like there is always. Enough of us are like close to the Bills that we sort of get roped in, and a couple of guys are Bills fans and just yeah, it seems like he's a player. There might be five guys in the league like this, that there's always a conversation going about Dalton Kincaid. And I got into that today. I stepped into it. You know, my stuff, like, what was his season high in yards? 52? What was Joe's thing about how 10 different players led them in receiving yards in games this year, none of whom was Dalton Kincaid? They just rewarded Shakir in the slot. Where does all this leave him? You know, his catchable pass rate was really low this year, which is weird for Allen.
Yes.
Like it just was a glaring difference to the rest of the team. Even Coleman. But Kincaid, he couldn't hit him. I don't know. And now they want him to get stronger? What, is he going to play with his hand down now? Seam stretcher Dalton Kincaid, first round pick, needs to get thicker? That's not going to lead to... You know, an increased depth of target. It's going to be the opposite.
Probably not.
What, they want him to be Alec Anderson now? Or Knox?
Hyperbole much?
I don't know. Like, what? Why is it good?
I'm not telling you it's good, but I mean, Alec Anderson. I don't know where they are. Nowhere with him right now, I think, is where they are. I don't think that's unfair. I mean, you had a season here that... It was absolutely available to them to make him work and for him to make himself work. Like, there was no longer enough. A lot of us thought, I thought, like, Shakir would be their leading receiver among wide receivers. And the reason I would make that distinction is because I thought it was possible Dalton Kincaid was going to catch 95 passes this year. Because the digs, that's gone. So there's no more deferring, right? Everybody eats. Well, someone's going to emerge as a reliable target, someone who's open all the time and available and reliable, going to catch it when it's near him. Probably the weirdest thing about his year is that missed target thing. Like that Allen was as inaccurate, so disproportionately inaccurate when throwing to him versus anyone else on the roster. I don't have an explanation for that. I don't know if people way smarter than me who study that sort of stuff have an explanation for that. I've not seen or read it yet, if it's out there, but it's just kind of weird.
Well, he had an injury. That's always what, it's often what gets brought up. And in Kincaid's case, that was true. I think of the play in Indianapolis where he got hurt and then missed time after that, and maybe it was already a problem before that. I don't know. It sounds like there's maybe a level of excuse or excuses that I'm not inclined to make. I've said, and I think most would agree, about this upcoming draft, there was Kincaid in 23 and then Coleman last year. And that was not technically a first, well, not I don't have to say technically. That was not a first-round pick, but it might as well have been. You know, they moved down to 33. It might as well have been a first-round
pick. It was their top available draft asset. Their first choice was to draft a pass catcher 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and they didn't like the advantage of the guys available to them when it was their pick enough. They didn't even really get much value out of trading with Kansas City. So it ends up on Coleman. And I think the logic there is, well, they won't do that again. I mean, they've just invested 2 years in a row, their top draft pick, on pass catchers. They also won a lot. So it's not like it's been, you know, a complete failure or anything. They've won a lot. And to me, like, this is why they won't do that again. To me, it's like, maybe I'm taking a little bit too casually. Like, it's just so obviously going to be defense because of what they've done the last 2 years. But that doesn't have to be right.
Well, I think a big reason it couldn't be defense, like, I'm inclined to agree with that. It feels like it did, was it 3 years ago now when they drafted Elam and we all were sitting here going, Trey White's coming off a knee injury, you don't have another corner, you're going to have to draft, and they did. And so whether that's corner or end, edge, as the kids say now, or defensive tackle, or even safety, like, they've got, and you can make a case for any one of those spots being the 30th overall pick. But what comes, you know, obviously we're in the midst of the combine now, but free agency is a couple of weeks off. And, you know, the trade market will heat up. There's news today about the Packers possibly being interested in trading Jair Alexander. There's been a defensive tackle from Washington yesterday was talked about. Of course, we've covered Myles Garrett, Max Crosby, whomever else. And that's not even to mention straight up free agents. If they swing a trade for a corner, say, or an edge player or a defensive tackle and check one of those boxes, it doesn't alleviate the need at all those other positions on defense, but it could make you feel like you can put that off with your 30th pick. And if there is a receiver there that you really like, that you could do it. I think you could make the case to do it if you do enough other things. I'm making it sound like just one move. They could make three or four moves on defense in free agency to stabilize any of those spots that are looking needy, and that would alleviate the lack of flexibility that I might perceive them having going into the first round of the draft.
You mentioned that Elam point. I mean, I think about him plenty during the season, whether it's because he's inactive or because he's active and it's not going well. That's how the season ended. You know, we talk about Elam, but I spent a lot of time on the drafts around that one. The Kincaid year where the four receivers went right in front of the Bills and they trade up for Kincaid. Like, they were that, it was that important to them. Laporta goes the next day. Then last year with Coleman, we've spent tons of time on that and what happened with that. The Elam year, do you remember, he was the fourth corner picked in that draft by the Bills at 23.
Yeah, the way the story has been written since then is that McDuffie would have been, like, this is convenient because McDuffie has turned out to be a stud, but like that McDuffie was the guy they really wanted, and go figure, Kansas City got him, and so then they moved up and took, you know, ostensibly what I assume was the next guy on the board.
So Kansas City picked 29th that year, and New England was up at 21. And the Chiefs traded a third and a fourth, and their first. Like, they're 29, a third and a fourth to move to 21 for McDuffie. That feels like a pretty big get by the Patriots.
I want to say that there are certain people that I work with that would have hated that.
I would have hated that, yes. You mean? Did you mean Panther?
Oh, I didn't mean you. No.
I would have hated that.
Let's talk about Dan Sontag.
But they moved up, so they traded a third and a fourth to move up 8 spots. And they drafted McDuffie. There were two other corners who were drafted very early. You may have heard of them, Stingley and Gardner, 3 and 4 overall. So the Chiefs make that move, and the Bills traded up too. They traded up 2 spots with Baltimore and gave up a fourth to be able to draft Elam, the fourth cornerback of the first round and the last cornerback of the first round. And then the Ravens at 25 drafted Linderbaum, their center. And McDuffie's excellent.
Yep.
The two guys early, Stingley and Gardner, are excellent.
Mm.
Elam is probably out.
I can't imagine him being on the roster.
And Linderbaum is excellent.
Nor having any value in any kind of a trade whatsoever. I mean, I just think he's absolutely... I'm not saying some team won't grab him and see, because, you know, first-round picks usually get a second, third chance to prove that they can do it. Just wrong situation, whatever. But he's almost got to be done here the way it finished up this year.
The Ravens also drafted Kyle Hamilton in that first round, by the way, earlier.
Like 14, I think.
14?
Yeah.
Is that why... Does he wear 14? Is that why he wears 14?
I don't know. I feel like there's certain players that I remember really liking that sort of their draft position sticks with you. And he's one of them. He's boy, what a nice player he's become.
It's a rainy Thursday here in our Amherst studio. Zach Jones, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here.
It's habit. I understand. Habit. He's also here.
He is. It doesn't help. He is right here.
You are staring right at him when you start.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually. Yeah.
Almost always. Let's stare at him together. Make it real uncomfortable for him.
Why?
Why?
Because I said it. Yeah.
I'm supposed to be removed over here. Just not, so that, not the focal point.
You are the star right now.
Main character energy.
Well, thank you. I guess I'll just take it away. And we got Sal Capaccio with us live in Indianapolis. Sal, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm just enjoying you guys not knowing each other's names. That's all good.
Yeah, no, it's something that happens. You know,
I feel good about it.
I think it's almost an extra point tradition.
I feel good about it.
Yeah, listen, I think so when you're with somebody a lot, like, you call them by... You know, and then somebody else comes in, it's just a force of habit, right? You just kind of call them by the wrong name or the other person. So it happens for sure. At least you're not getting into fights at Starbucks, you know, as far as I know.
There we go.
Yes.
That's where I wanted
that
to
start. That is the greatest start to a segment of all time.
I want
to
talk about this so bad, but I want to know, like, no information. I want to build the story myself.
I want to build the story myself.
You like the imagination more than the actual facts, right?
I want, like,
because, but honestly, like, the facts
door.
Might be better than the imagination in this case. I have no idea.
That's right, yeah.
I've heard a lot of things about it, though. Last night, we were out and about and heard about this story at the Starbucks. So let me explain to you how it works so you guys know and get a picture here, all right? This will really help you there, Zach. So there's a really big convention city, and there's tons of hotels here. But the hotel where most of the team employees and NFL employees stay is the JW Marriott. And at this JW Marriott, downstairs, there's a bar called High Velocity. It's a really big bar area, and it's kind of the congregation meeting place for everybody every night. At some point, we all wind up there, and I'm talking, it's coaches, GMs, scouts, media members all over the place, because everybody's, you know, kind of, some are like kind of vultures, just trying to figure out and get information and go talk to people. But it's also great just to kind of meet up with people and network with people. It's a great area. It's a great spot. You know, for example, last night I was out there down there with Josh Reed at Channel 4, and we were just hanging out right by kind of the area where the doors are. And instead of being at, there's two big bar areas, and you can go to one or the other, but we were just kind of talking with people, and Josh looks at me and goes, this is actually the best spot to be, because everybody's walking in and out, and sure enough, here comes Leslie Frazier. And it was so great. I hadn't seen Leslie. I saw him on the field in Seattle last year, but it was just super cool to just kind of catch up, talk to him, talk about life, talk about football. You know, it was really cool, but that's what happens. Anyway, so that's where everybody is. Well, right above this on the second floor is a Starbucks, and that's where a lot of people go to get their coffee in the morning, of course, even in the evening. Like, it's just, hey, long day, you're going back to the hotel, you stop at the Starbucks, right, at the hotel. And there's also a lot of media members who hang out there just because a lot of the team executives go through there, and they just want to say hi and talk to them and get information. Well, yesterday, we had this report from Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports, who said Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford met at this ski resort in Montana, and Brady was like recruiting him. What was the word you used? Recruiting or hosting him or something. Well, not long after that, Ian Rappaport quote tweets that and says, they happened to be there at the same time and ran into each other. There was no recruiting or hosting. So Jordan Schultz comes back on Twitter and says, if you believe that, then I have a bridge to sell you. Well, then Rappaport doubles down, and he's like, Tom Pelissero, I should say, who was Rappaport's colleague, kind of comes back and backs up Rappaport. And like, well, Don Yee, the agent for Brady, is like, no, like there was nothing going on there. They just met. And Rappaport backed that up with, like a lot of high-profile people, they have homes in that area, or they go skiing or something like that. So it was all full on, let's go and debunk this from Jordan Schultz. Clearly, the agent, Don Yee in this case, was trying to make out a, paint a picture of, okay, my client didn't do anything wrong. He's not tampering, you know. And so apparently what happened was Rapp was at Starbucks. Jordan Schultz comes into Starbucks. They see each other. There are words exchanged, and maybe even a little bit more of a bowing up or something, right? Like, I don't think it got physical, but it got to the point where it could have been, and it almost was. And because Ian Rappaport is an NFL employee, mm-hmm. that had to be reported to NFL security, who is now investigating.
Man,
I my headcanon is so much better for this, because like this. I'm imagining that someone like jumps up to like one of the counters where you're giving your coffee, and then just goes mm-hmm. flying elbow into someone else. Like that's what's in my head, and I kind of just want that to be there forever.
For me, and Sal, I mean, you can speak on this too, because you're around a lot of these reporters. I know Mike Shope has talked about a lot of this yesterday too. It's just like, I'm not going to take the word of Brady's agent as like, oh, yeah, no, we like this is totally like serendipitous.
We
crazy.
Didn't do anything
Montana,
wrong.
A notoriously small state. I mean, you could just run into anybody there.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing was after that happened.
I think it was Josh Norris. You guys know Josh, right? Underdog mm-hmm. Fantasy. Mm-hmm. I think it was Josh. I could be wrong. If you look back at his Twitter, it's probably him, I think. Who there's a picture of like five guys on a podcast, like just sitting around. And Josh wrote something like, hey, I randomly ran into these guys, so we did a podcast, right? It's kind of a funny joke.
So good.
Right? Like, oh, yeah, we're just randomly running in. Josh Reed and I were saying that. Like, yeah, we just randomly ran into each other at high velocity. Like, no, we were out together, obviously. But it's just so funny how this has been spun and the agents give the information. Because, Emily, let's be honest, this is the game that gets played, right? Where if Rapp and Pelissero, you know, get the information from Don Yee, you know, this is the information, because later on, obviously, and throughout, you know, I'm sure their relationship, I'm sure that Don Yee's giving them information, very good information about clients and deals, and this is how the game is played.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I get it. It is what it is. Some of the tweets can be like, oh, you just copied and pasted what they sent you. I get it. It's fine. It's just, I'm with you, though, Sal. I saw your tweet yesterday. I want a Hard Knocks version of this so bad.
Because
we're
never going to
get another off-season one.
Yeah, I was on this morning with Jeremy and Joe, and that's what happened. Jeremy, and when I explained the same story I just did to Jeremy and Joe, and Jeremy said, okay, here's a great idea. Hard Knocks, High Velocity. I said, oh my God, that is amazing. Hard Knocks, High Velocity, Combine Week. Put a camera on the media and what goes on in the conversation and who's trying to talk to whom. And it's pretty wild, actually, guys, to be honest with you.
And this is what I've like become to love about the combine and stuff like that is I like everything that has nothing to do with on the field stuff. Like I've kind of stopped like worrying about the like testing starts today. It's now in primetime windows. I think today the testing starts at 3. Could not care less. I will find the numbers I want later on Twitter. This is the stuff I like.
It's the true peaks and valleys of the combine testing that really end up like affecting draft stock. For example, you always remember DK Metcalf with the three cone. Or last year, Xavier Worthy breaking the record for the 40-yard dash. That affects draft stock. But typically, it is about what's being reported, which you and the others amongst the media, Sal, you let us know when teams are talking to a certain athlete or, you know, anything of rumors going on about off-season ideals that the general managers want to go after. Those are the more interesting storylines, and it's never anything that's going on actually testing-wise.
Look at Matthew Stafford. He's kind of become, you know, he's not a draft guy, but now there's a real feeling he's going to be moved arguably quickly. Well, I mean, we'll see.
I think that's become maybe the number one story here this week, guys, is Matthew Stafford.
Is Stafford, who's talking to him, maybe tampering going on with the Raiders, which, like, come on. I'm so tired of Brady just, like, being able to kind of do whatever he wants. He can be a minority owner and can still broadcast with impunity, it seems, at bet points, even though he offers absolutely nothing, in my opinion, on the broadcast. Then we have this where, again, a notoriously small
Because legally
state,
he can't.
Yeah, a notoriously small state in Montana. He just happens to run into Matthew Stafford.
You never know. You know, it's just the NFL is, honestly, it's the ultimate soap opera. It really is. It's live, real life, real time drama.
So good.
For 12 months of the year. Whether that's during the season and playing games or this time of year where you have the combine, you have free agency coming up in a few weeks, the deals are, you know, guys, I mean, we all know the worst kept secret in the NFL is, you know, even though you're not supposed to talk to agents before March 10th, that's happening this week, right? I mean, what happens. They see each other. You're not supposed to, but everybody knows, and that's where you get a sense. How did we know last year? I can tell you last year, like it was, or 2 years ago, I guess it was, whatever it would be. I came out of here knowing, like, okay, Tremaine Edmonds is getting paid by someone. Like, he's not going to be back in Buffalo. Like, it was just kind of, like, known because that's what happens. You talk, these agents are all here. You know what's changed, though? I'm going to tell you guys this because you're both college fans. I know you are very much, Zach. What's really changed, too, though, is, and I've run into quite a few people this week from the college world agent-wise, like the agents of college. I'm not talking about the guys going to the NFL now. I'm talking about the guys playing in college with NIL deals.
Well, I mean, look, now we're getting different managers. Game. The Senior Bowl, Sal, is going to look radically different next year with Jim Nagy now going to Oklahoma. That's what it's going to be now. We've all kind of known the SEC, Big Ten, like those have essentially been developmental leagues for the NFL. Now the veil is off. Like, they're essentially the development league for the NFL. You will go where you will get playing time and where you can develop, where you will play the best competition. Me and Derek were talking about this yesterday when the Nagy stuff broke. There was always kind of like shadow GMs. It was just illegal to do. But now it legally is allowed to happen. It doesn't necessarily have to now be your biggest booster that was kind of the guy that was doing it. You know, if you've ever seen the 30 for 30, Sherwood Blunt for SMU was the guy.
Yep.
It's actually a position now, right? And look at all these teams. I mean, even Ron Rivera now is going back to college, right? Saying he's the GM, whatever his position there is, he's helping out. But think about these teams. I mean, Adrian Wojnarowski, it's amazing, right? GM of St. Bonaventure. It's actually a position. So a couple quick stories for you last night. Again, these are the things that happen when you're here. So I'll say I was out with my buddy Josh Reed last night at Channel 4, and we happened to be, you know, at a place called Harry and Izzy's where a lot of people go. And all of a sudden look over and he sees a friend of his he's known for a while, but we start talking and through other people, we start meeting and happen to meet a person. I'm not going to say what school, but this person is at a high profile school who is the person in charge of their NIL money. And I'm like, well, what a different world that is for you now. And he looked at me, he goes, Sal, he said, my job now, all I do is take care of agents. I got to wine and dine these people because I have to keep my players. He said, these agents are just selling these. It's crazy. He said, so that's what I'm doing. It's every year. He said, I got to keep players. It's not even about the, you know, the guys leaving in the portal. I mean, or getting guys from the portal. It's about keeping your own players, right? Mm-hmm. And literally said, that's my job now, just to make friends with these agents in college. It's incredible. And then I go over to High Velocity and I see a guy who happens to guy happens to be a Bills fan. He goes, hey, Sal Capaccio, I know you. And I'm like, okay, he's got a NCAA lapel. I'm like, you know, what do you do? He said, I work for the NCAA. He says, I'm in charge of some of the stuff that comes on with the NIL stuff. And we started talking and he's like, there's nothing we can do about it right now. Every time there's a court case, we lose.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Like, there's nothing we... It's wild, right? So, yeah, guys. I mean, that's what this week is about. It really is just so much of that stuff. It's such a drama-filled week in a lot of ways, but so good to get information and learn things. By the way, I'm going to sound like the old guy here. Do you guys know who Mike Mamula is? Do you ever hear that name?
Oh, I've heard yes. the name, yeah.
Okay, well, you were talking about combine workouts. When you get a chance, look up Mike Mamula. He's a Lackawanna native, went to Lackawanna High School, and he played at Boston College. He was a good college player. He was one of the first people to ever actually specifically train for the combine and its drills.
Oh,
yeah. Went to the combine and completely dominated at the combine in these drills, and because of that, he was taken with the 7th overall pick by the Eagles and completely busted out.
Yep, he's in the league for 5 years, just with the Eagles,
yep.
out by the year 2000. And that is a thing that I think maybe gets lost now in the modern day, is that guys have to train for the combine. It is its own sort of thing, which is why now a lot of these guys, too, you will see, don't really do a lot of drills. I just saw now in a report that Mason Graham, the other defensive tackle from Michigan, only doing the bench press. That's the only thing he's doing.
Yep.
And it's because some of these guys are like, no, I'm going to get ready for the pro day, which is ultimately... We're going to put together the
a combine
nicest
with more
looking,
control.
Yeah, we're going to put together the nicest looking pitcher for our player to get them drafted. I remember
it's a personalized combine for your players.
And I remember I said this on the nightcap a few nights ago. I remember being awestruck when Teddy Bridgewater, coming out of Louisville, decided at his pro day, I'm going to take the gloves off and show everyone I can throw without the gloves. Mm. And it was a terrible pro day. And my whole thought, even at the time, I was a lot younger then, but even at the time, I went, dude, what are you doing? The whole point of this is like to make yourself like look the best you can. I wouldn't be surprised if at Wyoming's pro day, when Josh Allen was going out there, they specifically put some of these slowest receivers they had out there, Sal, to maybe try to get, you know, Josh like, hey guys, yeah, look what he's been working with, but look how far he can throw the ball. Just to build it's him really up that little bit more. That's what the pro days are. Is we're gonna make our guy look the best he possibly can. Where the combine,
yeah, it's really
there's so many random things being thrown around.
Yep.
How the game is played from a lot of different levels. So the other thing that's here this week, too, guys, is, you know, there's the testing. But I'm here to tell you, like, listen, the testing is the testing, and the numbers are the numbers. They're not the teams that do it right, the teams that understand. Now, you get your guys like Mamula and I just and other guys. But now they're to a point where people know these guys train. All the testing is confirmation now. So what happens is they'll go and they'll test. And I've been told by multiple people in front offices over the years, as long as there's nothing really weird about the testing, like a guy is way better or way worse than something we expected, then if that happens, they'll go back and recheck the tape. What did we miss here? Why was he so good there when we didn't think he would? Why was he so bad there when we didn't think? Otherwise, okay, it's the testing, and you know we expect this. What's really important here is the medical.
Yes.
They do these physicals with these doctors who are, there's a pool of doctors they do the medical with, and they get these reports on these guys. And then each team gets 60 interviews. The Bills are meeting with a lot of defensive linemen. They're meeting with a lot of safeties. That's great because those are positions that they need. Receivers, right? We'll see who's saying they're meeting with them or not.
Right.
But they don't have to meet with a lot of offensive linemen. Not a position of need. They don't have to meet with quarterbacks. Not a position of need. So you can focus your attention on these other positions. But that's where the stuff matters here. It's the medical and it's the interviews. You get 15 minutes with 60 different players over the week. In those interviews, you can structure them however you want. You could have in that room whatever people to ask, the coordinators, the coaches. The Bills actually have their team psychologist in that room with them. She asks a couple questions at the end of the interview, whereas some people do not ask questions. They do have their psychologist. They don't have their psychologist. It's just totally different. And I know this because one of the prospects told us this, you know, that he was in there. And that happened. So everybody treats this totally different. That's what's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's still not a perfect science, but it is so cool how much the draft process for teams has changed from even just, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where a guy like Ryan Leaf, you know, had a lot of character issues, didn't matter, cared all about the physical stuff. Now you're getting, you know, potentially out-of-pocket questions in interviews just to see a guy's reaction. It's really, really cool what it's become.
Agreed.
Sal, we know we got to get you out of here. You got to catch a flight. We'll see you soon, man. Have a great flight. Thanks for coming on with us.
You got it, guys. I know you guys have it in there, and you know, with the fans, if you want to play for the fans, really good stuff with Chris Sims yesterday. I talked with him about Josh Allen winning the MVP, so we have that and a couple other things in there if you guys want to get to that today. But thanks a lot. Great week this week, and I'll be back, and I'll be on tomorrow.
Happy happy flight, no fight.
Thanks, guys.
That was Sal Quaccio there on the Wester Hotline. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer
here
on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Two-Hill back in, second and eight. Pressure up the middle. Hurts in some trouble, and Hurts goes down. Now that's a sack by Jonathan Allen while being blocked, able to pull him down. Now 8.5 on the year for Allen.
Jonathan Allen, defensive tackle, Washington Commanders. Ian Rappaport just tweeting a bit ago. The Commanders are taking calls on Jonathan Allen, who has 1 year left on a deal for $15 million. Washington plans to do right by the player. Pro Bowl defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. So Washington plans to do right by the player, and Allen's camp is involved in helping him land at the right spot, either via trade or free agency. He has 1 year left at $15 million.
Okay.
So PFF grade for him, 68. Hold on. Let me pull up the pass rush.
Yeah, I've got the pass rush stuff on
okay.
him. He last year a 68.5 pass rush grade. Every year of his career, though, he's at least above average. He had one elite year in 21. Some of his advanced pass rush numbers are even better. I could bring that up. Like pass rush win rate, where he stacks up in that area versus the Bills guys.
Okay, I see what you're saying. He had 5 sacks. I take that back. How many sacks did he have last year? Jonathan Allen. He's a name. Like, he's a guy we know.
He's a big name.
And I guess it's decision time, take a pay cut, be traded.
Yep.
Okay. Jonathan Allen.
Here you go. So last year, some of his pressure numbers, total sacks as well.
Yeah,
he's just again, I'm like kind of stuck in 2021 looking at his numbers and waiting for the rest of them to load.
Yeah.
2021, like he's the best. Like he's Aaron Donald level almost as a pass rusher.
I believe they save $7 million by cutting him.
Okay.
So that might be why they're trying to find a home for
he
Jonathan Allen.
He had a 10.4% pass rush win rate that actually was below Ed Oliver at 12.6. Ed Oliver actually, they thought, had a really good year. 26 total pressures for Jonathan Allen. That would have been second on the Bills for their interior lineman. Oliver had 49. Oliver also played like twice the amount of snaps, which is also, keep that in mind. Pretty good numbers. Right. Definitely not as good, though, as previous seasons.
Brandon Bean to speak with reporters at the media at the Combine at 2 o'clock today, so stay tuned for that. All right, you had something in free agency. Joe in the break looked at me and goes, oh, I got something. It's going to make you mad.
It's going to make you mad.
All right, I'm up for it.
All right, Ian Harditz, who is now with Fantasy Life, right? Matthew Berry's Fantasy Life, yeah, formerly PFF. Ian Harditz just did a podcast/YouTube video. He is predicting landing spots for 9 of the biggest free agents. And I think he's only doing offensive because they do a fantasy site.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready to react in real time. I'm looking right in the camera. Would you tell me this thing the Bills are going to do in free agency? Okay.
I have not thought about this at all for a second as a combination, so I don't even know what my emotions, my feelings would be about it. The graphic, though, on the left, this is not it, is Chris Godwin on the Patriots. That's the graphic on the left. That's the guy on the left.
Okay.
The guy on the right is Diggs in a Chiefs uniform.
Oh, it's fine.
That's fine?
That's fine.
Never mind.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Diggs in a Chiefs uniform?
Sure. Whatever.
Not a problem?
No. What am I going to do? It's fine.
You know what you would do? You would lose your mind because you think he's being villainized by Bills fans already. If he goes and plays for the Chiefs, it's going to be, he's like supervillain now. And I don't need that.
Well,
I'm ready for a couple years to go by and we're going to go back to him being a beloved figure here. I think he's the best receiver in Bills history. If he goes to the Chiefs, you know, do I have to put a 5-year extra buffer on that now because he went and played for Kansas City?
Well, the Bills,
depending on how good he would be,
the Bills would not trade Diggs to the Chiefs. That was the one place he couldn't go. But they would, of course, trade to the Chiefs at the draft. Their receivers are good. They already got, you know, Worthy, Rice, and Diggs. Hopkins is a free agent.
Hopkins is a free agent.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm not too worried about Diggs.
So is Juju, a free agent.
I'm too worried about Diggs.
All right.
What I'm worried about is the Bills just running it back with the same receivers and, you know. Because can I give just one? I'll give you one pushback to they were good anyway, which is a fair point. You want to tell me, guys, they scored 30 points a game. They set their franchise record for scoring. They're good, 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 good. Yes. But if they do that again, Joe Brady's going to leave. And then you're going to bring somebody else in, and is that coordinator just going to be ready to roll out a room that doesn't have a separator or doesn't have a speed guy? Like, the league has shown us again and again how important these pieces are, and I'm actually at the point where I think McDermott wants one. I really believe it. And enough of the, well, we got close to it, and we think of this guy like that. Eh, whatever. We've been down this road a million times. Jonathan Allen, trade idea. Diggs to the Chiefs. Okay. Higgins?
T. Higgins? Higgins stays, doesn't he? I feel like he's staying. I think Burrow...
The only thing
I think it's about Burrow. I know we had a guest on from Cincinnati last week that didn't think it was about Burrow. It's like the organization will pay him. I think it's about Burrow. I think Burrow is gonna make sure his presence, even if it's not him like strong arming them, his presence is gonna make them invest in some guys. And I think Higgins is gonna be one of them.
Could be. I saw a little bit ago Luther Burden, receiver Missouri. Like McShay and Kuiper all have him falling out of the first round. Like, that's a guy you should probably go get, Luther Burden. He's awesome.
Yeah. Second round, right?
Yep.
For him.
Trapasso was just tweeting out a guy from Florida who he compared to Diggs coming out in college, and that's Elijah Badger. And I'll just take a guy named Badger. Come on. Badger? Sounds great. Elijah Badger.
I mean, there's nickname opportunities.
A lot of nickname opportunities.
That would sell some jerseys.